Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
And this is Devin Leary.
So listen, full disclosure, we are recording this on a Saturday before the, I hate the word even, the election. And we know that no matter who's ahead on Tuesday night, a lot is going on. We know, you know, it's important. I'm sick of celebrities like telling me to vote because I'm like, I know. And I know that everyone else knows. We trust that our listeners don't need to hear from us and they know how we feel given some of our comments about Republican women.
Yeah.
And how devastated we'd be if ugliness prevails and how hopeful we'd be if the hard work of so many good people paid off and we began to clear up the wreckage of the past 4 years. So you guys know where we stand. We haven't been standing idly by. Devin and I have been writing postcards and phone banking. And so we are hoping that goodness wins, as all the Marvel movies have taught us that it will. And we have decided we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, I think that personally, I have been in escape mode for a while, aside from like phone banking and stuff. And I'm just assuming that our listeners might feel the same way and might also want to get a little break and escape from it all. So that's what we're going to make this episode about.
Should we take a deep breath?
I don't know. That makes me anxious.
Okay, we're not going to do it.
We're not going to take a deep breath.
So some recent events that don't have to do with that. The Dodgers won a big award in LA. I think it is something to do with the World Series. I only know that because people were lighting fireworks in my neighborhood and I got so annoyed. I hate fireworks and they make me insane. I'm happy for the Dodgers and their families and whoever is on the team. I really don't care about sports, but I know their pitcher, Clayton Kershaw, through Will. I've met him like a couple of times. He happens to be extremely attractive and he has an amazingly sweet wife. And why I think it's worth mentioning at all is because him and his wife met when they were 14.
I don't get involved in sports at all, but the only time I do is if there's like an athlete couple that I become interested in.
I completely identify. I also love following football players and they're like, a lot of them are kids. And so they're dating or married to like their high school sweethearts. And I love it.
Yeah. Some people, that works. Like, some people, they meet when they're a child and they just stay together and that works.
Clayton Kershaw and his wife are so in love. He asked her out in between classes in eighth grade, in the hallway in between classes. They are just like the cool kind of Christian. Like, they do a lot of charity work and they're good people with open minds and just have kids. So really, the news has nothing to do with the Dodgers winning anything. It's just me wanting an excuse to talk about high school sweethearts. Devin and I are going to give the people what they want. We are planning a very exciting Bachelor Bachelorette episode in the upcoming weeks. So we can't go too in-depth right now, but I need to talk about how horrible Yosef is from the current season with Claire.
Yes, if you're watching The Bachelorette right now, you know what we're talking about. If you're not, all you have to know is that this guy is so toxic and he has been causing drama all along. He started out on the season having like DM'd with another girl and some guy was like, I just got to do the right thing. I got to tell Claire that he's been DMing with someone. I'm always like, how do they find out about these DMs? Like, it's like every season there's a DM scandal and it's like, are they reading everyone's DMs? Are they putting their DMs on like a projector screen and everyone's like, okay, you messaged with that girl from high school. Okay, you did this. Anyway, so Yosef in the most recent episode, basically he just is an incel. And so the fact that like this is the thing is he never should have been on the season because he's an incel. So incels are driven by like female rejection to kill people and get insane plastic surgery. So why would he go on a show where the whole point of the show is basically rejection? Like the premise of the show is one person rejects like 25 people and then gets engaged to one. So if you're an incel, it's not going to work.
He was upset because Claire yelled at the guys for not jumping up and asking to hang out with her one cocktail party. And then she said, let's play strip dodgeball with the guys on one of their group dates. And Yosef wasn't on it, but found out about it and was like, it's classless. It's disgusting. He keeps on waving around this daughter he has, like, as my daughter. I don't want her to see her father naked on a TV show. And all this stuff about, like, I have a daughter. I'm away from my daughter right now. And it's like, you know what? No one asked you to be on a fucking dating show. You're not going to World War II.
Right. You're not drafted. But can I just say my favorite interaction thus far on the whole season is Yosef complaining about that, like, about how they strip down naked. And he's saying, like, I don't want my daughter to see dad's ass on national television. I don't want what she sees dad's ass on national television. Like, I don't want that. And I was like, okay, dad's ass is just like such an interesting phrase. But my favorite line of the show was this one guy who is so dumb and simpleton. It's like, just,
you'll have to be more specific. There's a lot of those on the show.
There's a lot of them, but it's also like, I almost am like, how did he even get past the audition process? Because there's no way he thought of anything interesting. I forget his name because he's so simple. He goes, Yosef, I mean, you could at least just strip down to your underwear. Like, he's like, oh, you wouldn't even just strip down to your underwear, Yosef. Like, it, I can't explain why it was so funny to me, but I just was like, wait, you're trying to have a logical argument? Like, this guy is saying, I don't want my daughter to see dad's ass. And he's like, well,
daddy's asshole. I don't want my daughter to look at daddy's asshole. And then, okay, but the thing that upset me is that he then says, like, I have to talk to Claire. He talks to Claire for, like, 20 minutes about how awful and immature and classless she is. He's just repeating himself, just berating her.
Incel. Just insert incel phrase from Reddit here.
And then he says, like, well, I'm away from my daughter right now, and can you imagine how much I'm sacrificing to be here? And she goes, I understand, my mom is literally dying. And he goes, I'm not done, I need to finish. And you're like,
wait. As soon as she starts talking, he's like, hold on, I'm not done. Bitch, she just listened to you for 20 minutes. Talk about daddy's sphincter.
This is when I wish production would get involved, though, because I was watching it with my mom, and my mom was saying, I don't think men realize how scary this is for women, like when a man's just berating you. And I literally, like, my chest was tight. I am in an emotional place with everything going on in the news. So I did troll his account, which I've never done with any celebrity ever. I went on his pictures and left vomit emojis on a bunch of them.
Amazing.
I have never felt an impulse to do it. I felt upset, like, you know, not completely falling apart, but I just felt anxious about it for like 12 hours.
Right.
But it's really funny because so many people are harassing him on Instagram. People will be like, you're so immature, Yosef. You're toxic. And he'll comment back like, let's unpack that. What do you mean by that?
Oh my God. Are you fucking kidding me? Let's unpack daddy's asshole.
Let's unpack that. I didn't want to show my daughter her ass.
I didn't want, my daughter doesn't have to know she has an ass. She doesn't need to know that. Yeah, it's too soon. Listen, Yosef's daughter, please, please ask for help. This is sad, but like, I really
do a Claudia Conway. Get on TikTok. Do a Claudia
TikTok. Tell us if Yosef has COVID, please. But also, I have to say, like, Claire seems so unwell, but she also acts out my, like, most base instincts. And I do relate to her, like, on every level. Like, I related to her in that moment so much. I relate to her being like crying all the time by accident. I relate to her saying, why didn't anyone come talk to me? Like, getting insecure in that moment and being like, wait, you should all, like, want to talk to me. Why don't you want to talk to me? It's just like, in that moment, I would have been like, oh, I'm having this kind of crazy thought, so I'll keep it to myself. And she's like, sorry, I just can't hold this in. I have to say something. And I get it. But also, I thought in the scene in that episode too, where the guy kind of pulled back when she was trying to kiss him, and then he, like, aggressively grabbed onto her neck, I totally agreed with her in that moment too. Like, that, he did react the wrong way. He like grabbed her and then like tried to like chase her down and be like, wait, I did want to kiss you. And it was like very creepy. I feel like she's recognizing the toxicity in ways previous bachelorettes have not.
Well, she's older. And also watching her reaction to that when he's like, whoa, what's wrong? She's like, nothing, nothing. I want to go inside. Let's go inside. Nothing. I actually so identified with it as someone who struggles with PTSD. I was like, oh, this is a total PTSD reaction. You're trying to brush it under the rug and like, I can't even deal with it right now. I don't want to confront you. I'm a little bit scared. I don't have PTSD related to a relationship, but just with other stuff. But I completely saw myself in that reaction. And I was like, oh, she's having a legitimate fear-based reaction. She's not faking it or anything. And she just wants to get away from this guy. Out of all the guys, I was like, you're going to choose the guy who literally shaved off his eyebrows?
Who has no eyebrows?
The guy on the facial date. We have so much more to say about The Bachelorette and The Bachelor, and we're going to have to save it. And we have a couple of special guests coming on to dig in further.
And it's not Yosef.
It's Yosef's daughter.
It's not Yosef's daddy's asshole.
Yosef's ass is going to come on and answer some questions. But speaking of questions, I don't have that many friends right now. Devin is my best friend. I have my family.
Speaking of questions, I don't have any friends.
I have a question.
God, why don't I have friends?
But what I was going to say is that I find so much comfort and love in the questions we get on our email account and through Instagram. And just thank you for writing in. I identify with everyone, and all the listeners are friends of mine.
Okay. Yeah, same.
Definitely. Yeah. Nice.
Nice. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. I want you.
And we're back with True Romance. Today, we're going to answer some listeners' questions. The first one comes from Yosef's daughter. What, does my dad have an ass?
She wants the truth, Yosef. Why couldn't you just strip down to your underwear at least?
The first one comes from Sandy. Dear Carolina and Devin, I love the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I have been dating my boyfriend for 3 years. Just before we met, he went on antidepressants that affect his sex drive. I like expressing my feelings for him through sex, and truthfully, I seek the validation of him desiring me. I am the one initiating sex most of the time, and for a number of these times, I get rejected because he isn't in the mood or isn't able to participate. I've tried my best to be accepting of the fact that this isn't his fault or my fault. I'm truly happy that he is on the meds that he needs, but honestly, it is sometimes difficult for my ego to take and my insecurities get the best of me. Do you guys have any advice for ways to feel the intimacy of sex without actually having it? I love this question, and it goes into a theory I have that I feel very strongly about that I've been thinking about ever since we got Sandy's email. So while women are growing up, or speaking for myself, media had a very strong narrative that men love sex, can't stop themselves from having it, and actually their balls are in pain and turn blue when you won't let them ejaculate on you. And we're also told that women are disgusted and annoyed when a guy tries to have sex with them. And if men are annoying, women get to withhold sex as punishment. From a young age, like from 16, was so confused by this. Like, I was like, I want to have sex. Like, I want to hook up with guys. I actually get turned down by guys sometimes. So am I breaking the form? Like, I don't understand.
I totally agree.
Is there something wrong with me? Am I like a bad woman because I'm supposed to be repulsed by it? And when a guy turned me away, I'd be like, oh, because I'm actually disgusting and you don't want to ever touch me. Over all the relationships I've had times when my partner wants to have sex and I don't, and times when I've wanted to have sex and my partner doesn't. But because women are taught that men have insatiable sex drives, we think that something is wrong with us if they don't want to have sex with us. Men are allowed to not be into sex, and that makes them human, and it doesn't make me unattractive. And to answer your question, do you guys have any advice for ways to feel the intimacy of sex without actually having it? I don't think this gets discussed enough, and I actually never thought about it until I read Carly Sorrentino's book, Sled Ever, where she talks about dating someone disabled who struggled with having sex and felt uncomfortable doing it because he was insecure. She said she regrets being obsessed with the actual act of sex and says, you know, they would hook up in different ways that were full of intimacy, that were pleasurable for both of them. Why couldn't she just enjoy that instead of basically being like, I need to just actually have sex so I can, like you said, like, so I can feel validated. And so I'm doing this thing with my boyfriend. And so I think that you're showing a lot of compassion for your boyfriend. I love that. And you, it's totally normal to feel rejected if your partner doesn't want to have sex. But I would say the biggest thing I would say is not to go to your partner ever with questions. This is something my therapist told me. I didn't come up with it. So I don't go to partners saying like, am I ugly? Am I disgusting? Do you hate me? Do you not want to be with me anymore? Because that sets up a really toxic dynamic where then you always go to them for that. And just know that you're hot and know this has nothing to do with you. And if you're feeling insecure, walk out of the room and then walk back in knowing you're hot. And I think it's like hot to explore other ways besides sex to feel that connection.
I mean, I still ask my partner those questions and it never works. And I'm really working on not doing that. Because as Carolina has told me and as other friends have given me this advice, like, you're never going to get like the security you want from a person because it only can come from like within you. Speaking for myself, like, even if my partner says, you are the most perfect everything, I'm so attracted to you, whatever, like,
liar.
I totally agree with the misrepresentation of this thing we grew up with where it's like, well, men only care about sex, so if they don't want that with me, they don't want me at all because that's all they care about. Which hasn't been true in my experience. And also, like, the reverse of it affects me where I have the idea of like women should like not want it. So then I feel like, am I like disgusting? Like that I like disgusting, like domineering, like I need this. Like that's not, doesn't sound like sexy for a woman when in reality, I think it probably is. And most of my relationships have come out of me expressing desire and not waiting for the other person to like come to me because I just was like, why am I like waiting around for this fairy tale moment that never happens where a guy is like, hey, so actually I've had a crush on you all along. But I think like to bring it to another question that we had that was related to this, which was, we had someone write in asking about how to comment on a lack of sex in a relationship without emotionally manipulating your partner. I think to that question and to the question of like, what do you do if your partner is like not that into it? My best advice to both is just to like let it go and try to forget about it and focus on other stuff and other distractions. Be in your own life instead of trying to like force it and obsess about it and magnifying the problem. You can masturbate, you can dress up, like make yourself feel good, make yourself look good, and focus on how that makes you feel and not how it makes your partner feel about you. And also the other advice that I think is really helpful for this is like people show their love in different ways. So like some people, physical touch or like attraction means love, but to your partner right now, that might not be what they're equating to love. So it's like maybe this person is like doing tons of acts of service for you. Maybe they like made you dinner and did the dishes, and to them that's showing like, I fucking love you so much. But if you're only computing sex with this person loves me, then you're completely missing all the other ways this person is showing up for you. And like, I've had that problem a lot in relationships because I'm not a like words of affirmation person, and I've had partners who like only, or like their main love language is like physical touch and words of affirmation. And so they would say like, I feel like you don't care about me. I feel like, you know, you don't show that you love me. And I'm like, wait, I like gave you a ride to this appointment. I like cleaned out the car. I made dinner. I did all this stuff. Like, how could you say that I don't care about you? But to them, it just wasn't computing because they only like, because I wasn't expressing it in their love language. So I would say like, try to focus on what your partner is doing and showing up for you with.
Yeah. Okay. We have to move on to other questions. How do you talk and calm yourself in moments when you're feeling insane jealousy? Devin? Nothing's coming to mind.
I mean, emotional terrorism is coming to mind.
Homicidal urges. I think in the moment, if it's what's happening in the moment, I've texted Devin. I remember thinking an ex was flirting with someone. And so I texted Devin everything that was happening. And that helped me like discuss it with another person instead of like dragging my ex into a bedroom and being like, what the fuck is going on? I wait until I'm calm. Sometimes it takes 24 hours and then I address it. And I really have to check in with myself. Devin and I check in with each other a lot about this in terms yes. of bouncing it off another person. So I'm not going to my ex being like, I just felt like you were staring at her the whole time. Or, you know, just really, you have to sometimes check in with other people to make sure that what you're seeing is legitimate or if it's just coming from inner lack. I can get jealous of anyone. I'm jealous of the Queen's Gambit for being good at chess, even though I hate the game. I'm jealous of Michael Jordan for being good at basketball, even though I don't like to work out. And then, like, whenever my ex was dealing with a talk, and whenever an ex was talking to another girl, whether it be at a party or through work or a friend, I always had a narrative around it. Like, okay, so then this is when your guys were falling in love. So this is because she's prettier than me, etc. And there were times when I felt like my jealousy was legitimate. But again, when I was feeling stable within myself, even watching my ex like talk to someone at a party, I would sort of be like, maybe they're flirting. I don't really care.
Yeah, I think also the advice that Sophia gave in our episode about jealousy was like, if it's something you feel like you need to bring up to your partner, you can bring it up in like a calm, vulnerable way by saying like, I'm noticing that I'm feeling like jealous about this thing. I'm sure it's nothing, but like, I just wanted to talk about it instead of being like, who is she? Who's texting you?
Yeah, I think, you know, something I was honest with an ex once and it felt really good and scary was he asked me what was wrong because I was doing my amazing Oscar nominated performance of Silent Treatment. And just because I was tired, I was just completely honest and said, I'm feeling really insecure right now. And instead of like delving into it, he just held my hand. And that was really helpful in that moment.
Cute.
Okay, our next question. 2 months in, everything's great. Why is he not asking me to be his girlfriend yet? And why am I rushing? To be honest, 2 months in doesn't seem like rushing to me. And a lot of our questions are interesting because I think of how women sometimes don't feel safe or feel needy for just asking what they want, because narratives are always that if we ask what we want, we're needy or aggressive or hysterical. And I'm allowed to say, I want to be your girlfriend.
Yeah, you ask. Go for it. I asked. I always ask.
I ask too. I actually ask in a really manipulative way. Where I say, so this person asked if we were dating, what should I say?
I'll just usually be like, so you're my boyfriend, right? So like...
That's what Devin says when someone delivers pizza to her house.
Yeah, I'm like, so wait, so you're my... That's what I say to the Dunkin' guy. I'm like, wait, so you're my boy... No, you're my mom. You're my daddy's asshole.
You do Shane West from A Walk to Remember and say, I love you. Now would be the time to say something.
And they're like, get the fuck out of my store. Here's your crawler. Now fucking leave.
Dunkin' is a scary place to go.
No.
No, we really don't want to spread that narrative. And we are so thankful for the memories that Dunkin' has given us and the caffeine that has provided us and the bags of hormone-filled milk that they've put in our caffeine.
I want a donut.
Our next question. How do you know if it's love and when saying I love you is acceptable? You are asking the wrong people.
Again, we just said we fall in love with someone who gives us a donut, so.
We say I love you before the ink is dry on the receipt of the first date. I don't know how to do this correctly, and I'm okay with that. It's a very confusing thing.
When you know, but then also sometimes you think you know, but really the person is just being really insecure and you want the fight to end, so you just say you love them as a way to get out of the fight, and then you're like, wow, this is actually like, I should never have done this. And then you're involved in a relationship you never meant to be in, and then it's like impossible to get out of it. And then
I have said it too, like in a manipulative ways, like I've wanted to just get it back when and I haven't really wanted to say it. So I think you should say it for fun and for free, sort of, if that makes sense. Like, don't say it just to get the reciprocated I love you. I remember once like North Korea was developing some missile and everyone in reading the news was freaking out about it. And I was really worried that like we were going to nuclear war. And I just thought, I want to tell this guy I love him before the earth explodes. And so I did, and he didn't say it back, of course, and I went into another room and cried, but that is my love language. Okay, next question. Someone wrote in saying, could you both try to be less prude, LOL? Okay, sorry we're not Call Me Daddy. We actually can't. We can't try to be less prude.
I think that this comes from the fact that most female relationship or sex advice podcasts are like, okay, so this weekend I fucked the waiter and then like I sucked his dick and it was fucking crazy and then I left him on fucking red because I don't give a fuck.
And we're like, we went to Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, we're like, okay, the Halloween donut at Dunkin' this year is so fucking tasty. Love it.
Devin's like, these are the Christmas decorations I'm buying this year.
Okay, I just like freaking love Demi Lovato. Freaking okay, I'm a love addict. But the truth is, we fuck. We have fucked. We don't have to go screaming off the mountain about it. Just know it's true. Obviously, we've done that. And also, like, I don't know. Like, I'll mention experiences if they're relevant. But I don't. I wouldn't want someone I hooked up with to like go on a podcast and talk about it necessarily. So some things I don't feel comfortable saying, sharing about previous partners.
I don't want my previous partners to talk about how I need to dress up as a furry and they need to dress up as a furry for us to be intimate together. I don't want someone talking about that on a podcast. So why should I be talking about my furry obsession?
Right. That, like, we listen, there's a place for furries and there's a place for talking about daddy's asshole. And this is a place for talking about daddy's asshole. So that's your answer.
Our next listener wrote in saying, I need some advice. I want to make my move on this hot guy, but there's an issue. He's really close friends with a guy I was dating in the winter / spring. So that sounds like a long time, winter / spring, by the way.
Half a year.
How should I go about testing the waters and seeing if he wants to bone? Okay. If you and this guy are supposed to be together, you will. You don't have to manage it. You don't have to force it. But I will say friendships get sticky. If an ex of mine was asking this question, even if we just dated for 9 months, about pursuing Devin, I would put on a diaper, drive across the states, and try to kidnap him.
Yeah. I would Jodi Arias that shit. Murder and then take some digital camera pics of it.
I've sort of done this. I dated this guy for a long time and then dated an old friend of his for a long time. And the guys were actually no longer friends at all. And that's one of the reasons it felt okay. They really, I don't even think they liked each other anymore. But even that got a little messy, but it was also, it wasn't something I was totally controlling, you know?
The thing I'm getting caught on in this email is that you're saying you want to hook up with this person, not like, I think I'm in love with this person. I think I'm like meant to be with this person. I'm like having this crazy connection with this person, because that would be one thing. Like I got into a long-term relationship with someone who knew and kind of was like loosely associated with, another person I had dated. And like at the time, I remember thinking about it and thinking like, this could be kind of harmful. I just broke up with this person. But the reason I decided to pursue something with that guy anyway was because I really felt like it could be a relationship. Like I had a really strong connection with him. I could see myself falling in love with him. So it seemed like worth it. Whereas hooking up with someone, like you could hook up with anyone. If you want to just hook up with a hot guy, go on Tinder, go on Hinge or whatever. And you don't have to like make a choice that's going to be harmful because it doesn't seem worth it.
Yeah. Even falling in love. I mean, I know it's rare, but there are other guys to fall in love with. There isn't just one for one person.
Right. I'm just saying, like, if you have like a crazy connection and you think like you're meant to be, that's one thing. But like, if you're just like, I want to bone this person, it doesn't seem worth it to like really harm your ex.
And I like to make decisions that I'm going to look back in 3 years and know they're good. I don't like creating more confusion in the lives of other people, which I have multiple times.
Truly, nothing feels better than looking back and thinking, I don't regret a single thing I did. As someone who's regretted like 90% of my life choices, the times in which I can look back and say, like, I actually did the right thing and I don't regret it are so substantive. It just gives me like this gut feeling of like faith in myself.
You grow a relationship with yourself. I completely agree. I don't have a lot of self-restraint. And the times that I've shown self-restraint, I've felt like almost high from it. Or I guess high is the wrong word. I felt a sincere sense of calm within myself and trust within myself. Our next question comes from a man.
Whoa.
We love our male listeners. It's very exciting.
I thought it was a myth. But we do have male listeners.
The man writes in, I want to reach out to thank y'all for the show. I look forward to it every week. I've been a listener since day one. Yay! And will continue to be until the sad day when the show is done. Will the show be done? Who are you talking to at iHeart? What is going on? What kind of intel do you have? His actual question is, I'm a 28-year-old cis hetero man recently getting back into the dating game after several years of working on myself upon the realization that my worldview and the way I interacted with women was heavily clouded by toxic masculinity. Is this Yosef? after this year's long dating hiatus, I'm finding myself to be overly thirsty for emotional closeness and physical affection. Some days I'm an everything is going to be okay and a 3-second hug away from sobbing my eyes out. Do you guys have any tips for curbing this desperation or ways to hide it, keep it in check during the early stages of dating someone? How many dates in does a holding each other and crying date become appropriate? So I think this is such an interesting question. I love that you're getting to know the side of yourself that's vulnerable. That's really going to serve you when you do have a long term relationship and have to go through the long conversations that long-term monogamy requires. I will say for myself, like my Uncle Roger said when he called my podcast trashy, he also said that I'm just TMI, too much information. I tell people too much too quickly. And just like our earlier question about sex, it's because I'm looking for validation. And I'm not thinking of that person as a person. I'm thinking of them as like those man-sized pillows you can get in Japan or just something to cuddle with.
Yeah. Boyfriend pillow?
A boyfriend pillow. I love doing it, but then after I do it, I get insecure. So I spill my heart out. I get insecure. I tell the person I'm insecure, and it becomes a longer runaround. Like, they have to comfort me when I'm telling them too much. Then they have to comfort me when I'm paranoid that I told them too much. And yeah, I'm allowed to have these feelings and want connection, but I need to actually trust the person first, or else it feels inauthentic. So, you know, wait until you feel really comfortable and don't just do it because you need it. I have to treat the other person like a person and not a attachment blanket or something. You're newly vulnerable and you can protect that.
Yeah, share yourself with a friend or a therapist first, maybe. When I was dating, single and dating a lot, I was one of the most awkward daters. I never knew what to say. And when I either said too much or nothing at all, and just like had no idea which parts of myself to like present to the person. It's just like an overwhelming process. It kind of reminds me of like in COVID now, when I see people for like a social distant walk, or like when I interact with like the pharmacist, like I'm so not used to human interaction now that I like I'm so awkward and say the wrong things, or I'm like, okay, well, actually, this is everything that's going on, or I say like nothing. That's kind of how I felt when I was dating. And my friend Brittany gave me the best advice ever that I still think about, which was just slow it down. Like, just slow down when you're on the date with someone, when you're sitting across from someone, when you're FaceTiming with someone and you're nervous, like, just take a breath and like slow down, think about like listening to the person, what is this person actually saying to me, and how do I want to respond to it? like being present and grounded instead of like, okay. And so then when I was in middle school and then this happened and blah, blah, blah. And which I still end up doing, but I always think of her saying like, just try to slow yourself down. Also on job interviews, I use that advice. Like just slow down, listen, ground yourself.
Such good advice. I'm going to take that in. And it's also, it reminds me of a trick my friend told me about where when she's overwhelmed, when she's fearful, when she's sort of going into the tunnel of anxiety, just looking around at the room or outside or wherever she is and just noticing objects in it. Mm-hmm. So right now I would say like couch, carpet, microphone, just really trying to connect yourself with reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder than one would think. Our next question is, hi ladies, my question for you is, how have you come to be so accepting of wanting to be married? In our generation and society at large at this point, it seems like having goals for your career is far more acceptable than having goals for marriage and a family. I recently had a conversation with my boyfriend about wanting to get married and have kids and found myself feeling kind of embarrassed for admitting that it's of equal importance to me as going far in my career. When you two talk about it, it seems like you're so open about it and you make it fun to be a woman who thinks boyfriends and marriage and weddings are exciting. So tell me how, please. I actually forgot that wanting to get married was embarrassing because you and I talk about it all the time. But I cannot stop wanting to do that. And I want a fucking wedding. I want a big emerald engagement ring. I want a veil. I want the pictures to be splashed all over social media. I want the engagement post where I go, ah, yes, obviously. I want a big family and to be in love forever and to never be apart and to have 5 dogs and a pony. And truly, there's a part of me that's tired of being cynical. I feel like with all the memes and how we've all become sort of snarkier because of the internet, we're supposed to be like, oh, I'm dating like this jar of Nutella or whatever, or just act as though we're going to be alone forever. And I'm tired of that. And I'm okay with being hopeful that I'm going to meet the love of my life someday and get married and have a bunch of kids. I think with what you're talking about, I've tried being like the cool girl in relationships and being like, I don't believe in marriage or whatever. I don't even care about that stuff. But I just got tired of pretending and lying and pretending that I didn't care about weddings or I never dreamed of one. And it actually only made me feel distant from my partner because they didn't know what I really wanted. And that didn't feel like intimacy. It felt more like I was performing something. And if a guy thinks I'm lame or conventional for liking something, then he isn't for me. And one of my favorite things about Devin is that she unabashedly loves like glitter, her Von Dutch hat, Selena Gomez songs on reality television. And none of those things make her less intelligent or interesting or career focused or less cool. And like one of my favorite moments of hanging out with you, it seems really small in like the past 5 years, that we were talking to a friend of mine who was like super hardcore and super punk. And him and I were talking about this punk band, Sheer Mag. And he was like, oh, Devin, you know, like Sheer Mag, right? And you looked at him and you were like, oh, no, I actually only listen to terrible music. But you weren't like being self-effacing or anything. You were just sort of like, yeah, so that's the thing. And it was such a, I remember just respecting you so much in that moment because I was like, oh, yeah, she's not trying to pretend. She's not trying to fit in or be like, wait, what do you think I should like?
All you can do is be your authentic self. And if this person doesn't like part of your authentic self, then it's never going to work, actually. So, like, better to know that sooner than to stay in a long-term relationship with someone who doesn't like that, as I have done. And been, like, repeat, like, literally, like, years of trying to make a person like my authentic self and make me like their authentic self when it's never going to happen. But I think like the idea of guilty pleasure is so stupid. Like you shouldn't feel guilty about anything that gives you pleasure. And also I'm so reliant now on like nostalgia and future tripping to escape from this dark reality.
Nightmare.
If it gives you joy to think about like marrying this person and having a crazy fun wedding, like why not indulge in that?
And it's okay also to have a sense of humor about it. You don't have to take it too seriously. I remember when I was 23 and I showed my boyfriend at the time a picture of a wedding dress I wanted, and which was still really cute. It was like a crop top and a like white skirt. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's really pretty. Are they going to be making that in 10 years? But it was like, you know, it was funny. We weren't taking ourselves too seriously. And that's the thing, too. Like, you don't have to be like, will you marry me or not? You can just be honest and be like, yeah, one day I want to get married. I don't know what's going to happen.
My boyfriend and I were walking through this like nature preserve, and there was like this clearing with like a path and a pond. And I just said, this would be such a great place for never mind. And he was like, it would be a good place for that, because he knew that I was thinking this would be such a great place to get married.
That's so funny. I thought you were going to say it was an old bit that I used to do with my ex, where whenever we went somewhere beautiful, like the first month we were dating, we went on a road trip and we walked like beside a lake. And I just kept on pretending that I thought he was going to propose. Like, I was like, okay, you want to go for a walk by the lake? All right. Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm sure you do. Which was really funny and now is tragic to me. All right, we're going to take one more quick break and then we'll be right back. I want true romance. So for our next question, when do you know if you should get back together with an ex? First of all, it's only your question to ask if you broke up with the person. If they broke up with you, it's not something you really have to be concerned about. Burn to anyone who's been dumped and burn to me. My therapist says, think about what you would need to change to be happy in the relationship. So think about where things went wrong and be ready to talk about that, if that is something that may happen. So if they are reaching out, if you want to reach out, think of what would need to change in the relationship. And depending on how long the relationship is, maybe let's try therapy. Maybe it's, okay, we need to spend more time together. Maybe it's we need to spend less time together. But think about what would have to change. It's not just let's get back together because everything was perfect. Obviously, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think it's very precarious. I wish that in times where I've gotten back together with people, I wish that I had thought more about what my motive was, because I think I would have realized my motive was partially wanting some kind of like security during an insecure and scary time. And that was not a good motive. Like, if the motive had just been like purely and solely, I think this person's amazing and I like really think we could have a great relationship, that probably works. But if there's part of you that's also like, and I'm really freaked out and I'm fearful and like I want some excitement, probably not good.
Our next question: what does it mean if you overthink your relationship all the time? Devin, did you send this one in?
I was gonna say that means you're me.
It means you have a brain and a heart, and it's totally normal and there's nothing wrong with you. I think that just because of your own time and because it takes a lot of energy to think about that stuff, you should curb it. When I say you should curb it, I mean you should try to seek exercises that help you just make more space in your head, because this stuff will take over my brain. I'll have trouble concentrating. I will be sad for literally no reason. And it's a really hard question. It requires lifestyle changes, in my experience.
Yeah, I think also the book Attached that we've recommended a lot, the reading that book and realizing that I am insecure, attached, and codependent, and that's why my brain tends to stick to relationship problems as opposed to all the work that I have to get done today or things that are maybe more important, that was really helpful for me, because then you can recognize like, oh, I'm just obsessing. Maybe I can recognize that and move on instead of like, I have to figure out this problem now, which is what I struggle with.
It's very connected to our next question from someone else that said, very happy in a relationship, but often feel like I still have to be prepared for a breakup. I identify with this so much. I remember once my ex was like slow texting me back. Like he was hanging out with guy friends, which I didn't know. So he literally hadn't texted me back for like 4 hours. And it was Saturday night. So I was like, wait, what is going on? Like, we're supposed to be hanging out. I went to go see my sister. I was lying down on a couch and crying. Like, I was just like tears. And I just kept on being like, I'm just so sad, because in my head, it was over. Like, we were at that point in my head, we had fully broken up. And I and I was just living my own narrative, no connection to reality. And I also, it's along with the book Attached, like Devin said, really helped me realize that because I'm a fear-based, insecure, attached person, I'm always, I think that if I plan for the worst outcome, then it will hurt less. Mm-hmm. And, but the thing is that when I'm always thinking of the worst outcome, I start acting like that person is going to leave already.
Right.
So I'm really insecure with them. Everything they do is a sign to me that they're going to leave. And I have to surrender to the absolute chaos of never knowing what's going to happen. You cannot control the outcome. You can just be nice and try to be present. And I start being mean if I think the person's going to break up with me. I try to make them jealous or fearful so that we're in the same place. It's just a really hard place to be. And it's a really sad place to be because you're missing, like you said, a very happy relationship.
Yeah, I have been in relationships where the person is so like fearful that we're gonna break up that it actually like pushed me away because I was like, so where's the room for just fun and like having a good day and like not having every dream and every small phrase that's said be a reflection of like whether or not we're gonna stay together. But also I've been on the secure side of that, and I've also been on the insecure side of that, where I am so fearful that I turn everything into like a mea culpa on like if we're gonna be together forever. And so yeah, I think the most helpful thing to me is also like remembering advice that Carolina gave me when I was younger, where I was like, I'm really afraid that like I'm gonna get fired, or I'm really afraid that my boyfriend's gonna break up with me, and like what if this happens, if that happens. And Carolina would say like, yeah, that might happen. That's okay. You'll be okay. Like, how are you going to make yourself okay even if that happens? And
it's
when
really I'm, hard to believe.
It's hard to believe, but when you're operating that way, I've been thinking about this, like trying to take this advice for myself recently. Like, that's the most attractive quality in a person, is if they are like, I'll be good no matter what. So I'm trying to work towards that.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I didn't believe it until it happened. I remember telling my therapist about my last relationship, like, I'm so scared we're going to break up. I'm so scared we're going to break up. And she said, why are you scared? And I said, because I'm going to be devastated. And she said, yeah, you'll be really sad. And I remember just hearing her say that, it actually sort of grounded in reality. Like, I'm not going to die.
Right.
I'm still going to be healthy. And what I would have to face is being really sad. And that just helped me really just, again, be present and know that I can handle that. And I did handle that. You know, I could handle being really sad. It wasn't something that completely destroyed me or destroyed my life. So look at what we're scared of. It's not as big as we think. Fear is a liar. So what you think is going to happen almost never happens. And you're allowed to just try to enjoy this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question, what does the honeymoon phase being over look like? It looks like quarantine.
Exactly.
I think it looks like I don't want to put makeup on right now, so I'm just not going to. I don't want to make out with you every single second I see you. Like, I can be at a party with you and not need to be next to you holding your hand and like trying to take you into the bathroom so I can like give you a hickey.
Yeah, it's also like the honeymoon phasing. I mean, honeymoon phasing, that's a fun verb. The honeymoon phase ending is like kind of sad because you feel like nostalgia for the excitement of like the beginning of it all. And I tend to like immediately romanticize like, it was so crazy. It was so fun. It was so exciting. But the silver lining is like, you can relax and like you're comfortable with this person. This person knows you. You know them. You know the things that bother you about each other. Like, you know, like, this person actually likes to go to bed early. They don't like to stay up all night, even though that's what you guys did, like, in the beginning. Stuff like that. And, like, it's, you can have a more functional life together. And I also, like, take for granted that when I was in the beginning excitement phase, everything else in my life fell to the wayside because I'm, like, insecure attached. I was anxious all the time, getting, like, bikini waxes all the time. Like,
losing your hair.
Losing hair, losing everything, losing time, losing sleep. Like, it's, we glamorize it, but it's kind of nice to just be like, cool, now we're partners and we're doing life together.
There's also things you can do that make it exciting again. I'm not talking about, like, stupid cosmopolitan tips of, like, you know, dress up in lingerie and walk around the house and dress in a schoolgirl skirt or anything like that. It can be as simple as
dressing as a furry. It can be as simple as being a furry.
It can be as simple as dressing up as his mom and walking around the house and doing his laundry. I think that something that my ex did, something that an ex-boyfriend did when we were dating and we had sort of hit the honeymoon phase for a while, we were at a party once and he just took my hand and took me into the corner of a party and we just made out. And I remember that's like one of my favorite memories because it wasn't just like when we were all over each other. There was something really sweet about it. And I remember my friend who's married talking about how her and her fiance at the time like just sat in the back of a car and made out for hours. And I remember thinking that was like so sweet, so hot. So, and it's like, yeah, if it's the honeymoon phase, whenever your thing just seems like you're going through the motions, you can take some time and pause and just be like, and just sort of bring it back to first base, literally. Our next question, is it normal to go from annoyed by them to obsessed with them? This truly reminded me about my relationship with my dogs. Where I was like, oh yeah, like my dog scratches at the mirror and makes me go insane. But then I'm taking pictures of him and looking at pictures of him while he's in the room with me. I think that you have to treat your partner like your friend. So yeah, of course you're gonna be obsessed with them sometimes. But when you're annoyed with your friend, you're never like, ew, you're being fucking annoying right now. Or you're never right. Like, what's wrong with you? You're just like, okay, I need to be patient with my friend. Like, they're being annoying. Devin, this isn't directed at you, and I don't get annoyed with you.
I was going to say, Caroline actually does say, ew, you're being fucking annoying right now.
I remember seeing a girl in high school say to her friend, I'm so over you right now.
That was me. That little girl was me. I think... yes, like it's normal, but at the same time, I just want to say like highs and lows constantly in a relationship is not healthy. I've been in those relationships where it's like one day you're screaming, crying, fighting. The next day you're like passionate, like we're amazing, or like just like, okay, never mind. Like it's more comfortable to stay in the relationship. Those ups and downs are not healthy. And in my experience, like it should be more we're great than annoyed, but
it's true.
Like, it depends on the situation. Anyway.
Yeah, I definitely have been in those up and down relationships. Annoyed is a relative term. It can either be like, you're screaming at me and you think that I hooked up with someone else. Or it can literally just be like, okay, I don't want to watch that show. And we always watch the shows you want to watch.
Right.
Our next question. How can a people pleaser stay authentic to themselves in a relationship? This is something that I've always struggled with, and it's really hard because, as someone once explained it to me, like, I already think that it's a favor that anyone's in a relationship with me, and being with me is such a chore that I don't think I have the right to ask for anything because I'm like, they're already doing so much by just, like, being in the room with me and dating me. Like, I'm so lucky to be here. And so I won't tell the truth. I won't say I don't want to go out tonight. I want to stay in tonight. I won't say I don't want to go on that trip. I will do everything I can to please them. And then I'll secretly get resentful until like I snap. I thought love was like a constant compromise of what I wanted. And I'm allowed to say very, now I realize that there's things that I want and I wanted that are very simple. Like, okay, and something that was helpful to me was having certain things that I knew I wanted. So when my boyfriend was out of town, I would say, I need you to text me or call me at least every day.
Yeah.
You don't have to call me and text me all day, but I need that. Instead of just being like, it's cool, do whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, because in the end, like, your authentic self is going to come out and is going to matter eventually. So it's like, if you're the type of person who needs a phone call every day and this person isn't the type, your partner isn't the type of person who can give you a phone call every day, that's going to come out and it's not going to work between you, or there's going to be work involved in like making that compromise. So it's better for it to come out sooner than later, as opposed to like putting up this like kind of facade that I put up when I'm people pleasing of like, no, I'm actually cool with this. Like, that's just a waste of time because eventually it's going to come out that I'm not cool with this. And I think, like, there's a way to ask for those things that's, like, calm and secure and confident, as opposed to, like sometimes my people pleasing can be really confusing. And I'm like, if you could, like, just do this thing, but, like, no big deal. No big deal. If you can't, no big deal. But, like, that's just more confusing. If you're just, like, direct and you're like, actually, this is important to me, so is that okay? Great.
This reminds me of a time that another guy, like my guy friend, was watching me call my boyfriend about a dinner I was having with a group of friends. And I was like, so you can come if you want. You actually don't have to come, though, but you can come if you want. Well, this is where we're eating, but you really don't have to come. And my guy friend was like, wait, what are you saying? Like, he was so confused. He was like, do you not want him to come? Why do you keep telling him that you don't want him to come? And I was like, no. I just want to give him the out in case he doesn't want to come. Right. But instead of just being like, hey, we're having dinner, come meet us, I thought that was way too aggressive. So I really just kept on being like, if you hate me, if you don't want to come to dinner, just don't come, okay? Don't worry about it.
I also want to say, like, this is connected to the people pleaser thing and to a previous question we had about, like, being authentic that I'm blanking on now. But, like, I am... Oh, the love languages thing. Like, I am not, like, a bubbly, like, warm person naturally. And, like, I show my affection in different ways. And I was in a relationship where the person wanted me to be, like, a warm, affectionate, bubbly person. And I tried for so long to be that, to the point where my therapist was like, I think you just have to say, like, I've done everything and I actually am not capable of being this type of person. And I remember asking my friend at the time, like, I was like, because I thought this friend was similar to me. Like, she's not very, like, warm, bubbly type. And I was like, does that bother your boyfriend that you're, like, not like that? Because mine is, like, annoyed by that. And she said, I'm going to say her boyfriend's name is Jim. So she was like, if Jim wanted to be with someone, like, bubbly and stuff like that, he wouldn't be with me because, like, that's not my authentic self. And it was, like, the most helpful advice at the time, because I was like, oh yeah, like, I should be with someone who accepts that, not someone who's constantly making me feel like I have to become something different than what I am.
Yeah, it goes back to the question about, like, are you embarrassed to want to get married too? It's like, okay, if you want to be with a girl who, like, I like burgers and motorcycles and I think Demi Lovato is stupid, then you should not be with me. Right. I like boygas and motorcycles. Sounds like a baby boy.
I like trucks that go boom boom.
I like firefighter trucks. How our next question, how do I unfuck my brain and become attracted to men who are emotionally available? As my therapist explained to me, you date men you're not attracted to. It sounds really weird, but I swear to gosh, it works. I was only attracted to men who did not seem that into me. And it was like, that's what I thought love was trying to convince someone to like you who wasn't really there. And whenever men really liked me, I was like embarrassed for them. Like, I was like, ew, you're being so embarrassing and like mushy. And how embarrassing for you that you're like so into me. When I started dating them, it was such a relief. It saves you so much time not having to convince someone to like hang out with you or like you. And I got to focus on so much other stuff. It really was when I made like headway in my career for the first time, because I didn't have to focus on like, what is this guy doing? Are we going to hang out later? I just knew that we were going to spend time together. But yeah, you don't go after the guy that you really want at first. And then you, as my therapist put it, you literally retrain your brain. And that's really what happened to me. If some guy doesn't seem interested in me, I'm no longer attracted to him because I literally do not have the time.
Yeah.
It makes zero sense to me. And it used to be like the most attractive thing ever. And I've had it explained to me like it's like gambling. Like people who are gambling addicts don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know if you're going to win. You don't know if you're going to lose. And that's a part of the high they're addicted to. And I was definitely addicted to that. Like, I don't know if you're going to be into me. I don't know if you're going to, like, want to call me. And then when you get the call, you're like, oh, my God, he called me. And there's something that's more exciting to that than, like, getting a regular phone call being like, are we going to have dinner tonight? Are you going to come over? I'm no longer interested in gambling that way. I'm no longer interested in, like, finding out that I've lost all my money or I've gained $1 million and he texted. I really like stability in my life because I need it in other areas of my life too.
Great.
How, next question, how do you stay optimistic about dating prospects as you age? I submitted this. Just kidding. Is this at me personally? We are all aging right now. Currently. Hate to break it to you. I don't want to be cynical anymore, and I'm choosing to be hopeful. And I think Nancy Myers is a great film director who will help you with this conundrum. As long as you have a beautiful kitchen and you are a successful playwright, you will find love.
Something will have to give. So just trust in that.
Keanu Reeves. Oh my gosh. One of my favorite movie relationships is Keanu Reeves and Diane Keaton and Something's Gotta Give.
It's very hot.
And Keanu Reeves will be forever hot because of that.
He'll be forever hot because of so many things. I think that like there's someone for everyone, truly. And I think we get caught up in the idea of like blanket statement things of like men only want to date younger women. That's an avoidant phrase. Like that's like making excuses for yourself to not do something scary, which is putting yourself out there. So don't listen to the blanket statements, I would say, and put yourself out there.
Yeah, you're going to be okay. And have faith that there's a guy that surpasses your expectations in terms of what you think guys are into. That's sort of like somewhat like a guy thinking that girls are only into like rich guys or girls are only right. into guys with like full heads of hair. Like,
right.
No, that's underestimating so many women I know. Next question. How do I follow the dating advice I give my girlfriends?
Girlfriends.
Sometimes I actually don't do things because I don't want to tell Devin that I did it. It sounds so weird, but like I've not texted exes because I don't want to tell Devin like I texted him and Devin be like, okay, well, you did that. I don't know. It's sort of nice to have someone keeping you accountable, but at the same time, no one's judging you. Don't worry.
Yeah, I also, again, like Carolina was saying, constantly just texting friends instead of texting the person you want to text, that like an ex or whatever, that is so helpful. And like instead of doing the action that goes against your friend's advice, just ask your friend again, like go back to them instead of taking the action, because that's really helpful. And also like there's a reason people give advice, and you know, there's a reason why we ask for advice, because we can't have an objective view on our own relationships. But I remember one, my friend Brittany, again, who I'll quote, gave me advice once where I wanted to text this ex. And she was like, why don't you just give it a day? Why don't you just give it another day? Why don't you just give it? Like, she kept being like, just wait, just wait.
You're like 90 years old. And she's like, give it one more day.
24 more hours and then you can do it. So, yeah, just like go to your friends instead of going to the risky behavior, I would say.
Yeah, and don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And whenever I make a mistake, I sometimes have the instinct to be like, I'm so fucked up.
I'm fucking crazy.
I'm psycho.
Margot Tenenbaum in the bathtub. Okay.
You wish. We all wish.
I know.
This question is deadly. Do you need to relay past romances to a current significant other? No, 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 no. I used to think this
but
was
it
like
is
being honest.
Fun.
It is fun. But I had a boyfriend once and when I was really young who was like, tell me everyone you've ever hooked up with and show them, like, show me their Facebooks. And I was like, okay.
Was it me?
Like, Devin was like, show me everyone you've ever been friends with. No, I thought that was like being honest. Again, it goes with oversharing. Like, I thought, like, if we're in love, you need to know everything I've ever done. You need to know everything about me. And right. Now I'm like, no, I don't want to know everything you've ever done or everyone you've ever hooked up with. I mean, I do, but I don't think that'll make me like happy. It'll probably just make me insecure. So I'm not going to pass that on to someone else. And I think that we have different ideas of honesty. If I'm like texting with a guy, behind my boyfriend's back. I should be honest about that, or I should break up with him or what have you. But I don't have to tell like a boyfriend about like a drunken hookup I had in college. It's weirdly hurtful, actually.
Just, yeah. And like also check your motives, because I've like said stuff like that in a really insecure way where I've been like trying to make the other person jealous or like think that I'm cool or experienced or something. And that is harmful. So I guess I would say like just think about, why are you giving this information?
Yeah, I used to like want to make ex-boyfriends jealous because I thought it was like a barometer for how much they liked me.
Right.
And now I'm like, that's so mean.
Yeah.
But I understand the instinct, and I think that it's either, yeah, it can be that. It can be like, should I be honest? Yeah, you really check your motives. Our next question is, can you have a platonic friendship with an ex? I used to say no to this, but I actually think it depends on time. Literally yesterday, I talk about impulse control. I bought a chair from Craigslist, did not check the dimensions of the chair, did not check if it would fit in my car, just figured it would, went to a super storage, bought the chair, found out that it did not fit into the trunk of my car. The guy who I bought it from was like, peace, have a good day. And so I was just sitting there with my mom and my car and a huge 100-pound chair. And my mom was like, call Henry. He has a truck. And I was like, why would I just call an ex-boyfriend out of the blue and be like, can you help me right now? But because we were kind of desperate and I felt bad for making my mom just like hang out in a super storage with me, we literally didn't have that many options. I just called him and was like, and he literally picked up immediately. I was like, hey, what are you doing right now? He was driving. I said, I'm at a super storage and I bought a chair. And he said, okay, I can help you with that. Drove over, helped me pick up the chair, drove it to my house, hung out for a second. I hadn't hung out with like a boy in so long that I was like, anyway, blah, 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 like so nervous. But I think that I don't know if you can be best friends with an ex. I've seen that happen though too. It just really depends on time and motive.
Yeah, I hate to be a broken record, but just check your motive, because like, if you really are like, we were better as friends than in a relationship, like, let's be friends and let's have dinner once a month or something. That's one thing. But if you have a motive that's more like, I want attention from this person and I know I can get it, or I like am interested in this person again. I've been on the other side of that where an ex was like, I'm actually like becoming friends with my ex again. And the motives were clearly not just friendship from the other person. And so I would say, like, what's your motive? Are you calling this person at 2 a.m. to like talk about your feelings? Or are you just like, yeah, let's get dinner every once in a while. Hey, can you help me out with this one thing? Like,
it's also if you feel comfortable introducing them to your current partner.
Right.
And not putting anyone in an uncomfortable situation. But if you're like, oh yeah, you guys will like each other and there's obviously nothing going on, that actually I think is like really sweet and normal. And, you know, for instance, my ex that helped me with the chair yesterday, we dated like 7 years ago. So I also feel like we knew each other when we were like kids. I want to answer this one question because I think it's timely. Someone wrote in, I'm dating this guy that says he doesn't like to text or call and leaves me on read for hours. No.
Just no.
No. And it goes with people pleasing. It goes with people pleasing. It's a small thing to say, I need you to text or call. And I don't think that's a big ask. And if they can't do it, that's you're putting yourself in a really fear-based relationship. I'm annoyed with this guy.
I know. I mean, I've dated someone who like wasn't a texter and like we talked on the phone every day. But there's a difference between that and like someone who is clearly on their phone, like posting Instagram stories, like uses their phone all the time, but just doesn't think it's important to text back to you. That's a red flag.
You can ask for what you need. And if they can't give that to you, you know, how are we going to do a long-term relationship? If you don't want a long-term relationship and you're just hanging out with someone, I mean, that's fine. But I would have trouble with this personally. Okay. Our last question. We haven't been able to get to all of our questions. And there were so many good ones. And we'll address them in later episodes. This last one is, what are some of the best romantic things you can give to yourself? Very quarantine related.
A Christmas tree.
Sorry?
A Christmas tree.
Christmas tree. Christmas in general.
Donuts.
Since I've been...
Cake.
Devin's word playing word association.
Ice cream.
Since I've been single, I have been doing head-to-toe lotion every day. I have like a cheap grapeseed oil I got from Whole Foods because Whitney Cummings said it's good for your skin. And literally nobody is touching me right now, but my skin is really soft. I do face masks even though no one's seeing me. Not face masks, like COVID face masks. I'm doing like
sheet masks.
Yeah.
She's an anti-masker, but she does take care of her skin.
Why would I need a mask? The virus is over. Just fucking kidding. Nightmare. I wear a mask all the time. I used to work out and that felt really good, but then I stopped and it's been hard to start again. Drinking water, just like taking care of yourself and presenting yourself even though you're not going to see anyone. I showered yesterday and put on curling stuff in my hair and like basically like brushed it, and someone at work didn't recognize me. They asked me for my name.
I also think like candles and like any kind of spa-like stuff that makes you feel like you're at a special spa. I recommend Bath & Body Works 3 Wicks. Making yourself a really good dinner or ordering like a really nice fancy dinner for yourself.
I know. I've been cooking in quarantine and it saves me so much money than ordering out all the time. And I also like I used to listen to a podcast while I was cooking. I used to like take phone calls while I was cooking. And now I just do it quietly, or I did last night. And it was so calming. And yeah, I'm just doing it to learn for myself, not to like impress anyone or, you know, be anxiously serving someone pasta that makes them sick, which I've done before. Once on Valentine's Day, my boyfriend at the time was gluten intolerant. And so I made him gluten-free pasta. And it's still to this day one of the worst dishes I've ever made for any human being ever.
Wow.
Well, that's it for our questions today.
That was the advice that we scrounged from our trash bin souls.
My brain that's been broken by the internet and Instagram.
My brain that the last cell of which was holding on to like the one math lesson that matters from middle school actually pushed it out to replace it with Kim Kardashian's dad hologram a couple days ago. So now my brain has actually become 100% trash because that is now, as they say, living rent free in my brain.
Pee-pee. Yeah, Kanye West got his wife a hologram of her dad speaking to her.
Talking about peefees.
And I, my ex for my birthday got me a candle.
People, you know, people have different love languages, as we've said. If yours is a hologram, congrats to you. So we hope that we were helpful, even though our brains are trash. And you should also get a therapist.
Our overarching advice is to get a therapist and to read the book Attached and just keep reading self-help books.
Indeed. Carol, I love you.
I love you, Devin. We'll catch you next time on True Romance. Thank you so much for tuning in. Oh,